कुंजा विहारी। गोपी जन्मदा गिरिभार यशोरानंदन रज जगरंजन यमुना तीर वनचारी यमुना तीर वनचारी जय राधा माधव कुंज विहारी जय राधा कुंज विहारी जय राधा माधव नमो विष्णुपाद परमहंस श्री विजयकृतय अष्टोत्तर शतश्री श्रीमान His divine grace is A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki. His Constitution Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Anantakoti Vaishnavinda Ki Jai. Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai. Kamsikaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Pravanachananda. Shri Dvaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhaktivinda Ki Jai. Shri Shri Radha Krishna Go Gopinath Shamakun Radhakun. Giri Govardhan ki jai, Shri Vrindavan Dham ki jai, Shri Maya Parnavadvip Dham ki jai, Ganga Maya ki jai, Shri Mura Maya ki jai, Bhakti Devi ki jai, Tulsi Devi ki jai, Harinam Sankirtan Yajna ki jai, Janatai Gaur Penaham ki jai, Samaveda Bhakti Vrinda ki jai, All glories of the Son of the Lord, All glories of the Son of the Lord, All glories to the Son of the Lord. All glories to Shri Guru, Shri Guranga, all glories to Shri Lapa. Hare Krishna. Welcome everyone. That are left, that didn't go to North Carolina or to Daytona Beach for the Rathiatra and the Sadhu Sangha Festival. A special welcome to our first-time visitors. Thank you for attending our Sunday program. Again, how many are here for the first time? Please raise your hand again so I can see for the first time. One, two, or three. Okay. Back there, okay. This Krishna consciousness movement is, we just finished our 50th year of being in the Western within the United States. We started in the summer of 1966. We incorporated, or the founder of our society incorporated this movement or this society in the summer of 1966. And we've been growing ever since. Now we are 50, actually turning 51 this year over the second half. And this movement is Srila Prabhupada. When we say the word, for those who are new, when we say Srila Prabhupada, that is the name that we give or has been given to our spiritual master, the teacher, the founder of our society, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. And he based this movement on Bhagavad Gita. In the introduction to this book, Bhagavad Gita, you will find where Srila Prabhupada states that this movement is authorized because it is based on this Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita, as we know, Bhagavan means the Supreme Lord, one who possesses opulence, and Gita meaning song. It is a song, it is spoken directly by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna. When Srila Prabhupada says, name is mentioned on every single verse within the book. It's not unknown who is speaking. And it's not unknown that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Also in this introduction, Srila Prabhupada explains how one should approach this Bhagavad Gita. He says, just as Arjuna accepted Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then when one is reading this great book, this great literature, Srimad Bhagavad Gita, one should at least, Srila Prabhupada mentions, at least theoretically, as you're reading, at least in theory, you should understand that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna, is speaking. He also mentions that some may say that Lord Sri Krishna was personally speaking directly to Arjuna 5,000 years ago. What value does it have today? And Srila Prabhupada also explains that this teaching is not limited to a particular time and space, or time and nation, or area, or a particular type of person. Although in general, the Bhagavad Gita is meant for Rajarsis, saintly kings, but that is in the sense that they are meant to guide all citizens, or all their, the citizens of their country, to live a religious life. And therefore, this Bhagavad Gita is important for every single person who is desiring to have a religious life within their lifestyle. It is also mentioned in the first verse, the introduction, where this Bhagavad Gita is being spoken, Dharma Kshetra, Kurukshetra. And in the verse of the Prabhupada and the commentary explains that this Bhagavad Gita should be studied very scrutinizingly. Later on in the Gita, Srila Prabhupada will mention that this Bhagavad Gita is not meant simply for armchair speculators. It is meant for someone who is a serious candidate for understanding one's eternal relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What that eternal relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead is described within the pages of Bhagavad Gita, very, very clearly. Many places within the commentaries, our teacher explains that there's no ambiguity in understanding what is what in relationship to the eternal soul in relationship to the Supreme Soul, Krishna. And as we read this Bhagavad Gita, and as we go through with our daily reading or weekly or whatever our commitment to this great theistic writing is, we can learn to appreciate more and more of who Krishna really is and who we are in relationship to Krishna. There are basically five topics discussed in Bhagavad Gita. There is Ishvara, that meaning the controller, the Supreme Lord, and there is Jiva, the individual soul. So there is the Supreme Soul, God, and there is the individual soul, all the living entities. Every single living entity, every single life form which we see is housing an eternal spirit soul. Not that just humans have souls and other living entities have no soul. This is described later on in the 13th chapter, Prakashayaka Krishna Loka Madhamuravai. Shaita Shaita Tata Krishna Prakashayati Bharata. That just as the sun alone, he's speaking to Arjuna. Actually, he's in the section of Jnana Yoga, which is to just fully understand the nature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in an analytic way, in a way for understanding knowledge. And he explains that just as the sun Itapakasya eka, eka meaning only, just as the sun alone illuminates this entire universe, so the soul illuminates this body with consciousness. So wherever we see consciousness, we should understand that there's the presence of the soul there. That level of consciousness would depend upon the covering of that individual living entity. Other living, other forms of life, now we are within this room, I'm sure there's other forms of life in the room, but the human form, those of us who've achieved this rare gift of the human form of life, you can understand what it is to be a human being. And other forms of life, they also experience that. But within all those different forms of life, there are four basic principles to that life. Eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. These are the four principles of life. And you'll see that every single living entity is engaged in whatever capacity they have to facilitate these four functions. So in the human form of life is a distinction. The distinctive point in the human form of life is that we are given a level of superior intelligence to the lower forms of life where we can question and try to understand what is the purpose of our life and what is the meaning of our life. Who are we? Who is God? What is this world? If I'm actually searching for happiness, why is it not always working that way? Or why does it rarely work that way in most cases? And as we move through life, we find that lesser and lesser. And so in this human form of life, it is a very, very special opportunity to understand one's eternal relationship with the Supreme Lord. Now that eternal relationship is described very, very clearly throughout the Gita. And it is one where we are known to be eternal souls. And Krishna gives Arjuna very simple analogies in order for him to understand. The first point, he calls him a fool, because Arjuna is lamenting over this material body. We find ourselves, actually I have one friend, that's kind of a humorous story, we need a little humor in the room sometimes. I have one friend, he comes to me the door and he goes, "Hey Maharaj, which one you like better, hankering or lamenting?" For the living entity, living entities are always hankering for something, or they're always lamenting for something that they didn't get, or that which they did get didn't work out right. So he was asking me, "Maharaj, which one do you like better?" And I told him, "To be honest, I like hankering. Because hankering means I'm still hoping that there's some chance. But lamenting means I've been totally defeated and there is no chance anymore." So these are the two things from the living entity. Well, humor in that. The living entity has these two things, and so in the human form of life, we find ourselves struggling in this material existence. That we are all eternal parts and parcels of Krishna, and we're struggling with the six senses, which include the mind. I listened to a recent lecture, a series given by His Grace Burjan Prabhu, and he was going through the different aspects of the monkey mind. The monkey mind is all, the mind is like a monkey. I don't know if some I see of you are from India. I know there are many devotees here from the Hare Krishna who have been to India, and they have experienced firsthand monkeys in a way which most Americans don't. And they're jumping from tree to tree, jumping, jumping, flickering, flickering, here and there. And this is the nature of the mind. It is always anxious. It is always hankering for something. And it is flickering. But in order for the mind to become controlled, this gets me to a nice point. We'll get into the second chapter. But I was going to, well, anyway, let me just, okay, that's fine. I'm talking to myself sometimes too here, I'm sorry. That it's described that one who is not connected with the Supreme Lord, Krishna, in Krishna consciousness, can have neither transcendental intelligence nor a steady mind, without which there is no possibility of peace. then how can there be any happiness without peace? So this is a very interesting point, because the analogy I was going to give you, which Krishna gives to Arjuna to teach us that we're not this material body, is very simple. Dehinasmin yata dehe komaram yavananjara tatandihan tadat taktir jiris tatya numyate. That the living entity residing within this body, that which resides within this body, undergoes different transformations. From childhood to youth, from youth to old age. What is dehino smanyata dehe komaram yavanandara? From komara to little child, the yogana to youth to old age. But yet the same spirit soul is present in each and every one of those forms. We don't consider ourselves different. Just this evening, I was embraced by a young child prior to the class, and he remembered me from visiting his home. I'm quite astonished because I haven't seen him. I didn't think he'd be old enough to remember me. And he was only about 6 months old the first time he saw me. But I do remember having a 3 or 4 year old body. I remember that. I remember having a 10-year-old, a 20-year-old, 40-year-old, 50-year-old, we're getting up there, 60-year-old. We'll stop there. It's progressing though. And I don't consider that when I was 5 years old, I was a different person, although I was acting differently and I was definitely in a different bodily shape, I was the same person which is residing within this body now. I think it was a year ago, I gave you a little story about that, right? You remember the story? She's shaking her head. Which one was it? The AT&T lady? I'm turning 65 this year, so it was 60. When I turned 60, it was the summer, I think I was 60 years old. Anyway, that's insignificant. So myself, I was visiting Giri Raj Swami. Do y'all know Giri Raj Swami? Very great soul. My obeisances to him. He's at Los Angeles for the Prabhupada Festival. And so my cell phone wouldn't work. Now, can you imagine a sannyasi without a cell phone that works? It's just like a disaster. And so my cell phone, somehow or another, at his house was getting stuck between different towers and was having a hard time working. And so I got on the landline or the phone line, and I dialed AT&T, and then she had me get on, and she called me on the landline, and she worked out getting my cell phone to only focus on one cell tower through the computer system. And at the end of the conversation, you remember this story from last year, Punishment? No. At the end of the conversation, she says, "Well, sir, do you have any other questions?" Never ask a Hare Krishna that. So I said, "Well, as far as my phone goes, I'm pretty satisfied, but I do have one existential question that popped up this morning about 3:30. And she says, "Well, go ahead and ask." And I said, "Well, I woke up very early, which I normally do, and I do a process of meditation, mantra meditation, prayer. But when I got up, I looked in the mirror and I saw a 60-year-old person standing, reflecting in the mirror. And I thought for a second, I remember looking in the mirror and being 5 years old, and I thought that was me. And then I said, I remembered also looking in the mirror at 10 years old, and I thought that was me, but that was a different me than was there when I was 5 years old. And then I remember being 20 years old looking in the mirror and thinking that was me, but it wasn't the same me that was there when I was 10 or 5. And now I'm 60 years old, and I saw myself in the mirror today, and that's definitely not the same person that was there the last 5 times. So what I'm trying to, so my question to you is that if my body is always changing, what am I? I must be the consciousness inside this body, which is just riding along with the change of this body, and I must be a person of some kind, and therefore I'm just trying to understand, if I'm a person, that which I come from must also be a person, because the whatever is contained in the energy must also be contained in the energetic source. In other words, if the sunshine has heat and light, the sun must also have heat and light, the energetic source, and therefore there must be a supreme person, and I'm just trying to understand the relationship with him. Can you help me? And she said, that's the most amazing thing I've ever heard in my life. She says, I agree with you 100%. I agree. She said, I've also undergone, I don't want to tell you how old I am. I guess she was an elderly lady. Most people, when we get a little old, when we're young, you ever notice, like, when you meet a young child, you ask them how old they are, they'll say, I'm 5 and a half. Do you ever see anybody that, you ever hear me say, I'm like 64 and three quarters? I mean, people just don't, when we're getting close to the edge, right? Anyway. So she said that I'm also experiencing that same thing, and this is an amazing fact, that we are something different and distinct in this material body. So what is the nature of that? What is the nature of that distinction? What is the nature of that we're trying to do? What is the purpose? And that is given. Krishna explains that we are meant to understand this ourselves to be spirit soul, non-material. That we are nachayate mirate vakadachyan nayam bhuta bhavita nabuyaha, that we are unborn, undying, ever-existing, primeval, nahanyate hanyamane sarire, that when this body goes, that soul remains. That soul remains for eternity. It cannot be destroyed by anything, but in fact, if we understand the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells Arjuna cannot be killed by water, cannot be killed by moistened by water, dried by the air, cut by a sword, burned by fire. All these different ways that one body can be extinguished, the soul can't be extinguished that way. Krishna brings all these things up because Arjuna had all those kind of weapons, contrary to modern weapons, which are just knives and bombs. They had water weapons, drying weapons, all these different types of weapons were there. And so Krishna consciousness is a process for awakening that understanding that we're eternal spirit souls. But I was, in my reading, it was the 11th chapter, I finished the 11th chapter today. And just in the last couple of days we were reading, and Srila Prabhupada was explaining that it's not sufficient to just understand that we're not this material body, we must understand the nature of the spirit soul as an eternal servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and to understand the process of engaging in that service in order to come to a place of complete purification. Otherwise it's incomplete. That incomplete level of just understanding aham brahmasmi, I am spirit soul, without the distinction of understanding there is a supreme soul, that not that I am at one point going to become the supreme soul and just I've just forgotten for a certain period of time and eventually I will understand that I am supreme. That's not it. It is that there is the server, there is the served, and there is the process of service. And that process of service is called bhakti yoga. Bhakti yoga is distinguished from the other yogas because unless all the other yogas are touched with some little tinge of bhakti, they have no true value in and of themselves other than the process that is performed. The Bhagavatam gives the example of someone husking just, or what do they call that thing? That shaker thing where they have the grains in it and there's no more grains, only the husks are there. So the other processes are just like all the grains are missing. There's no, you're not going to get any product from it. All you're going to do is get the labor you do from shaking the husks. And that's the distinction that Krishna consciousness offers. The fruit, the phala, the fruit of the activity, the fruit of the action. Because it is being placed in the proper perspective. It is being placed in the proper position. I was recently in Dallas, and many years ago many of you may know, I used to live here for 20 years in Alachua, Marita's visit, and when I used to go to the University of Florida, we always used to ask the students, what is your GPA? And they would say, oh, 3.2, 2.1, depending on their study levels, 4 point, you know, whatever. I would say, no, not your grade point average, what is your God point average? In other words, we may have accomplished so many things on a material level. We may have accomplished so much materially. But if our God point average isn't up, then that which we have accomplished materially is going to end up nil, or null and void. There's a nice verse in the Gita, Nehabri Kamasdan Sasi Pachavaya Navijate, Swapam Apya Siddhamasha Chayate Mahatobaya. But in this endeavor, and when Krishna is speaking of this endeavor, he's speaking of the endeavor. He's just gone all the way through describing giving an analytical study of the nature of the spirit soul in comparison to the supreme soul, the nature of the spirit soul in relationship to material energy. And now he wants to touch on sankhya. He wants to go on to the point of engaging in devotional service, and he's about, because in the second chapter it just touches on devotional service, and he's saying that in this endeavor of devotional service there is no loss, there is no diminution, and a little advancement in devotional practice can protect everyone and anyone from the most dangerous types of fear. And the types of fear that we have in this material world are many. This is a whole topic, this idea of fear. What is the cause of fear? Fear is due to the unknown. If all of a sudden we hear a big boom out in the front of the building, we'll all be afraid because we don't know what it is. It could be just a lawnmower exploding, or it could be somebody, it could be anything. But because we don't know, we feel a sense of fear. And so this process of Krishna consciousness gives us an awakening of spiritual understanding, so that when the soul depart from this material body, we will not be in fear. Because we will understand our constitutional position in relationship to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and we will understand the nature of Krishna. There's a nice point in the tenth where Krishna explains, Mitru Sarvas Haras Chaham, I am all pervading death. This seems kind of like a gruesome understanding of God. That God appears in the form of death. This is there in the Gita. And so for the devotee of the Lord, when the devotee of the Lord comes to the culmination of the termination of this particular series of events, this material body, which Prabhupada says are all temporary and circumstantial. Very interesting point. Everything that we have are going through our life, it is temporary and it is circumstantial. We find ourselves in different types of circumstances under certain periods of time. And they are all temporary. And the proof is that my talk with the AT&T lady, because the five-year-old temporary experiences that were circumstances at that time are gone. I'm no longer hankering for a tricycle and wanting a bicycle. That's long gone. That temporary circumstance is gone. Now I'm experiencing something different. I won't tell you my hankerings. There are many. Don't worry. They don't go away. The body demands. We find in the 13th chapter, Srila Prabhupada explains, as long as one has a material body, the demands are going to be there. So whatever type of material body one may have, young, old, middle age, this age, that age, no matter what age bracket you're in, you're going to have a particular type of demands that go along with that circumstance. But if you have a little intelligence, we'll know that that demand is temporary. And we won't focus on that demand and make that demand the focus of our life, where we deviate or we distract ourselves from the process, the devotional service to Krishna, which will allow us to extricate ourselves from this material atmosphere. This is the benefit of coming to the point of Krishna consciousness. This is the wonderful benefit of engaging in bhakti yoga. Because bhakti yoga clears the heart. This was taught to everyone by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, where he explained very simply, Cheto Darpana Marjanam Bhava Mahani Navarpanam, that there is a forest fire. this time. Krishna enters in this Kalo-asmin. Krishna in the 11th chapter, in fact, I just finished 11th chapter, and Arjuna, see, at the end of the 10th chapter, which is the Vibhuti, the opulence of the Absolute Truth, Krishna is going into Bhakti Yoga, and he's teaching Krishna all about himself, and Arjuna is convinced in the 10th chapter, actually, and in the end of this, the beginning of the 11th chapter, he says, all my doubts are finished. I just accept you as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then Krishna, and Arjuna wants to see the universal form so that others will understand that what he understands. Krishna, Arjuna understands that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he wants others to understand this. So therefore he requests Krishna to manifest this universal form so others in the future may also understand that yes, the person I'm talking to is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And when Arjuna experiences that universal form, it is so far beyond his imagination, because he even prays, my dear Krishna, please forgive me for whatever I may have done in madness. Because they're on a level of friendship. Krishna and Arjuna are on a level of friendship. And on a level of friendships, I mean, we'll call each other nicknames all the time. We go back and forth. I have many nicknames. Some of my friends here are smiling. They know my nicknames. I know theirs. And Arjuna was praying, oh, Krishna, thanks. I called you, oh, Yadava, oh, this and that, alone or amongst friends. I'm embarrassed by that. And then Arjuna says, I just come to this point. I understood you as a Supreme Personality of Godhead. I was free of all doubts. But now what is it? I can't understand your mission. What is going on? And Krishna says, Kalo Asmin, I am time. I am time. I come and I destroy all that comes into this material world. But does not destroy the spiritual side. Our spiritual nature is never diminished. Only the material contamination, contamination which we have acquired through our past previous desires. And as we go through those things, as we go through those different circumstances, if we can remain focused on Krishna, if we can remain focused on the Absolute Truth, and understand that this is the ultimate goal of our life. When we get into the 10th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, like right in the middle, I think it's within the first, those four main verses, or right before that, Prabhupada explains that everyone is in want of an ultimate goal. Everyone is searching for a goal. Our goals are constantly changing. Those are our desires. Those are our hankerings. And our hankerings are always changing. But no one is satisfied by that change of the hankering. Whatever we get, it is taken away. I don't want to give like a dismal class here. I'm trying to get away. I'm trying to adjust my mentality here. But the idea is, we were talking about hankering and lamenting. So one hankers for something. One desires something. And there's two options. You'll either achieve that desire, or you won't achieve that desire. And the result of that is the same, no matter whether you achieve it or you don't achieve it. If you achieve it, it'll never produce that which you thought it was going to produce. And you will lament. And if you don't get it, you'll think, oh, wrath, I didn't get it, and you'll lament. So in either case, on a material level, there is lamentation. But on a spiritual level, there is only, can we say emancipation? There is only liberation. There is only the gift of understanding our constitutional position in relationship to the Supreme Lord, which makes us whole and makes us complete. And makes us literally one with the Supreme Lord, not one in that we are quantitatively and qualitatively the same as God, but we find ourselves, like Srila Prabhupada gave the example, the machine. There's a little tiny part of the machine separated from the machine, has very, very little value. But once that part is connected to the whole machine, that little teeny tiny part has a very, very special value. And when we come to Krishna consciousness, we can come to the point of understanding that no matter how insignificant we may be, whatever opulence we have, opulences are there. Intelligence, fame, beauty, strength, knowledge, all these different things are there. We all possess those to a certain degree. And when we take those little, whichever amount we have, big or small, and we dovetail those in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then we're like that little part that becomes placed in within the machine and has a true sense of value. Until then we will experience a true sense of value. And once we experience a true sense of value, we will emanate our true value, and then we will earn our true value. This is a material humanistic conception that I transformed into a Krishna conscious program. Know your value, emanate your value, earn your value. It's something that people teach people. It's something that people teach people. It's something that is taught to people who don't know how to go to get a job. First of all, you must have a mindset that I have a certain value before you enter into the arena. Then when you're in the arena, you'll project your value and they will see your value and you will earn your value. Well, this is the same with Krishna. How does Krishna say that? Yayatam mam prapajante tamstataiva bhajamiham. As you surrender unto me, I will reward you accordingly. Inasmuch as you know our value, inasmuch as we know our value as part and parcel of Krishna, and the eternal servant of Krishna, and we engage in that activity of Krishna, that's showing our value to Krishna, then Krishna will reciprocate with that. And how Krishna wants to reciprocate with us, that's his business. What's the last verse of that? Sikshastika. You know that whatever Krishna, whether you hold me, embrace me tightly with, hold me tightly with your embrace, or you leave me brokenhearted, I'm going to be satisfied because I know I'm on the proper position. I know I'm in my constitutional position, relationship with you, and it is your choice. Because you're the supreme. I'm the subordinate. I'm not the controller. You're the controller. I'm the controlled. And this is our position. And in as much as we accept that, and as much as we allow ourselves to proceed on that level, then Krishna reciprocates with that. And as much as we say, okay, Krishna, I'm going to do it like this, Krishna is going to say, okay, go ahead and try. Just go ahead and try. I mean, it's up to you. But this Krishna consciousness movement offers such a wonderful, wonderful opportunity for us to come to a complete level of understanding. True confession time from the Hare Krishna Swami in the chair. Sometimes I watch Christian preachers give lectures just to learn how to communicate with the audience. And I saw one recently that was a little disappointing. Because, I mean, many of them are. They do know how to communicate. And the problem was with him is that not that we have anything against Christians or Jews or this ones or that ones, it was just this particular person was having difficulty accepting the fact that God is so unknown that one cannot know him. And immediately my brain went to Gyani. This person is going through biblical studies. He's going through it on a level of Gyan, like the Mayavadi philosophers, the impersonalist philosophers, or the people who just want to experience or try to understand God in a theoretical way without, just like Prabhupada said, without opening the jar of the honey, you'll never taste. You can rip the outside jar of the honey for as long, I mean, I guess eventually the lid would wear out if you kept chewing it for long enough. But the idea is that unless you open the jar of honey, you'll never taste it. And so the point, as soon as he said that we cannot know that which is unknown, we can never know, I thought, this is the situation for those who want to impose their process of understanding God upon God. This is the level they'll come to. We don't know. But for one who comes to the point of allowing themselves to enter into a process whereby Krishna, a process which Krishna has authorized us to be able to understand the Supreme Lord as he is, then one has access to that.
One has access to that because it's not that we can know God. God, that's not within our ability. We can't demand. We cannot demand to know God. But we can act in such, what was that Shuddha Bhakti Siddhanta wrote, that one should not try to see God, but act in such a way that God will want to see you? This is the position. Because once we act on a level of devotional service, on a loving reciprocal relationship with the Supreme, whereby the Supreme Lord sees our endeavor, sees our efforts to understand Him, then as stated in the middle of the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, that God helps those who help themselves. He'll give us that understanding. So they were missing that point. They're saying that we can never understand. And on that level, he was 100% true, because it's not touched with bhakti. It's not touched with devotion. So this Krishna conscious movement, it gives us the opportunity to understand Venun from that word, like those verses from the Brahma Samhita, the beautiful form of Sri Sri Radha Shama Sundar, Krishna Balaram, Sri Sri Gauri Tara. I did want to mention that I can't remember the name now, Indra. Whoever addressed the deities today did such a wonderful, wonderful job. Did anybody take a real close look today to see? I mean, it's phenomenal. It's phenomenal. That we have the opportunity to take a look face to face and see Krishna. This is the miracle of Krishna consciousness, that this Krishna consciousness movement has been blessed by the pure devotee of Krishna, Srila Prabhupada, in that he has agreed to come here and allow us to serve him through his servant. This is what we've been given. And by doing that simple activity, so much is benefited and so much is gained. So I got a little note that the class goes from 5 to 6, including Q&A. So I'd like to, if there's any Q&A that we would like to discuss, I think there should be Q&A, questions, comments, and answers. Anybody have any question that they may like to ask or comments they may like to add? Okay, I guess everybody agrees. Some of you may know there's a small liberal arts college in Orlando, Florida, Rollins College. There used to be a nice professor of philosophy there, and he invited me. I don't know if it's graduates, I think it's just undergraduate at that time, and maybe it has graduate studies now. He was a professor of religion and philosophy, and every semester he would invite us to give a class. And one year I went, and he invited me for Monday morning at 8 o'clock in the morning. Now, this college is very expensive, and only very, very wealthy kids or very good athletes can go. And so you can imagine wealthy kids on a Monday morning, they weren't very attentive. And it was basically just introduction to Krishna consciousness. We told them about the founder, the founding of our society, of our teacher. With that, we told them a few of our principles and a few other things. And then we said, does anybody have any questions? And of course, no hands went up. And I had a Brahmacharya assistant with me. I said, okay, hand me the hair clippers. We'll just shave them all up because they agree with me. And then a few hands went up. First, Professor Bernstein said, well, Maharaj, what are you doing? I said, don't worry, I'm just joking. A few hands up, and I told him, it's not a matter of shaving your head, it's a matter of shaving the heart. One has to shed all those anarthas on the heart to experience Krishna consciousness in full, and we have an opportunity from that. And some young man actually joined the Hare Krishna unit from that program there. He was already a devotee, but he went back to school and he decided, that's it, I'm going to go back home. I think he was from Belgium or something like that. So we're not going to shave anybody up here today. Unless you want to get shaved up. Okay, so thank you very much. Thank you all for inviting me. I'll see you again in maybe in a few months or a few years. It's such a nice chance to see you. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki. Thank you.